This is the Beltline to Broadway podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, I'm chatting with Raleigh Little Theater's Heather Strickland and Patrick Torres. If you are a theater lover, you have undoubtedly seen all of the messaging over social media and on television over the past month that Broadway is back. Several high-profile shows have reopened, including Hadestown, Hamilton, Moulin Rouge, Chicago, Wicked, and Aladdin. But if you're paying close attention, some shows, including the highly anticipated show Back to the Future in London, have had to suspend performances due to COVID, which makes all of the celebratory fanfare surrounding reopening theaters kind of a mixed bag. And many of those same challenges Broadway and West End main stages are experiencing, our local community theaters and regional theaters have experienced as well. And that is where my conversation with Raleigh Little Theater's executive director, Heather Strickland, and artistic director, Patrick Torres, begins.
We are unqualified to do the jobs that we are doing right now. None of us are public health experts. It's not really the job I ever wanted to do. So, you know, not only are we unqualified, but it's not our passion. It's not what we want to be doing. So trying to figure this out has been incredibly challenging. And also you're making decisions that people feel very emotional about, because it is their health. It is their safety. It is their mental health during this time that they still want to be out and enjoying theater. So how do we create a space where they can still enjoy theater, they can still escape and still grow and learn, but they also feel physically safe and healthy. So, you know, it has just been something that I never thought that we would have to be always thinking about. And, you know, the creation of the art is sometimes secondary to figuring these things out. And that can be heartbreaking, and that can be very hard to sit in, especially now that we've been doing it for a year and a half. So I'm grateful for our community partners that are so willing to share information with us and collaborate and, you know, certainly talk about how they're thinking through this as we are also struggling of how do we do this.
The issues you're speaking to are hitting every theater, no matter large or small. Broadway, West End, Back to the Future has had to suspend performances because one of their principals has to quarantine for 10 days because of COVID. So it's an industry-wide thing. It's not, the local theaters are not immune to it.
Just to jump in there for a second, I mean, I hope that what we're learning as an industry is that, you know, we are theater by its nature is an art form that is about a celebration of humanity and humanity coming together to be creative. I hope that what we're learning through all this is that we can give more grace to people when they're tired, when they don't feel well, when they need a night off from rehearsal, that they don't become problems. They don't become high maintenance, that we just listen and that we just like understand that people and bodies are unique, and the expression of those feelings and emotions and also just like health is important. And we should be listening to that and really trying to take better care of people. So I think that's another thing that I hope we're learning as an industry. And then I think the thing that's been reinforced at RLT is that we cannot do any of it without the volunteers. None of it. I mean, Beehive would not have happened if there hadn't been really dedicated people willing to put those masks on, get back there, change the costumes, change the lights, move the sound equipment every night in the heat, all that stuff. Like it was a reinforcement of how grateful I am that we have people who are willing to help us, even though it's a hard time. It's a hard time for folks.
Patrick, I'm curious, has COVID changed the way that you approach directing? When I saw a number it was so brilliantly done. And because of the nature of that show, I really felt like whether you did it during a pandemic or not, the directing wouldn't change. But for a show like Velocity of Autumn, does your directing change to take into consideration some of the COVID factors?
That's a really great question, Lauren. I would say that primarily the way that I select shows has changed at the moment. You know, it's been an interesting because, you know, all of us in the theater world right now who operate kind of on a July to June fiscal year are in the middle of season planning for 22-23, if you can believe that. And it's really tricky to think about, like, what are we planning for? Are we planning for a return to some sense of normalcy? Are we planning, you know, that it's still going to be time for COVID? Can we finally open up the Gaddy again, which is our small theater, which I miss so much? Mm-hmm. Like, we're really, you know, wrestling with all of these things. So I think show selection has changed. As a community theater, you know, the first 6 years of my job, I was trying to pick shows with the biggest cast possible to have as much opportunity as possible. So COVID's changed the game in terms of, like, doing some smaller shows. We've been picking shows that don't have intermissions and things like that. So I think that that's matter. But I think in the directing process, yes, I've been thinking about distancing. You know, a number was created at a very different time in February. And so the gift here is that the cast is fully vaccinated. They weren't at the moment that we auditioned for this show. That wasn't a requirement, because the world was looking much different. It just happens to be that both of them, both the actors in the show agreed to reveal that information to us and to each other. And so we do have a little bit more leeway. And so, but I still like, I think that this show works because there is a lot of distance in between these two people. And in their relationship, there's a lot of distance. And so I do think about it. I do think about it when we're on stage. And I think some of the prettiest pictures are when there's distance in that room. And so we've been lucky that the text lends itself to that. But I will say the thing that has changed and was really changing even before the pandemic, but the pandemic has really, if we're looking for silver linings, which I think is important to do sometimes, one of the things that the pandemic and rehearsing during the pandemic has done is it is normalizing consent, right? Every day, we have to consent to taking our masks off to rehearse. Every day we have to check in with each other about our comfort level. Every day that you're not feeling well. We've canceled like 3 or 4 rehearsals in this process because an actor's like, I've got a scratchy throat. I'm not worried about it, but, you know, and we're like, we don't have to be here. We got it. You know, we'll make it up. And so like this culture of consent and listening and being compassionate and not... Yes, there's an opening night coming, but not letting a sense of urgency overwhelm us has been a true gift. I think directing has changed in that way for me. And I think RLT as a culture, especially with Heather and her intimacy work, has really started to prioritize consent as an organization. And that feels really good.
There are issues of consent. And it's interesting, Heather, you were one of the very first interviews I did before you took this position, right when everything shut down back, you know, 18, 19 months ago, however long that was. And we were talking about how the consent would change, how this culture of consent would change. So that is definitely a silver lining. I want, and I'm not sure about our audience, how much they understand this, but I do want to kind of bring it up. So theaters like Raleigh Little Theater are community theaters, and they don't fall under the same equity guidelines that a professional theater like a North Carolina Theater or a DPAC would, for example, that's going to present the national tours. So how are you all making the decisions, because you don't have some, you know, equity agency telling you this is what has to be done, this is how far everybody has to be. I know with the Equity House, it's like 10 feet from the stage, and there's all these guidelines. you all don't fall under that. So talk about, kind of walk me through the decision process of the safety protocols. Obviously you have the government mandates, but aside from that, what's the thought process?
Well, you know, as a community theater, we've always tried very hard, you know, because I think if we see as like one of the pieces of our mission is to give people an experience to prepare them for other experiences, like in the professional world. So we have often, even before the pandemic, really looked at the equity guidelines as the pathway to how we operate. So an example of that people, you know, just might not be aware of is in an equity rehearsal process, you have to either take a break for 5 minutes every hour or 10 minutes every hour and 20 minutes. And we have always adhered to that. We try to honor like the equity rest time, like more than 12 hours between rehearsals and things like that. So we have consistently tried to follow equity as kind of a benchmark for how actors should be treated. Now, of course, there's, you know, there's some things that equity does that we have not implemented, like having, you know, a cot in everybody's dressing room for naps in between shows and things like that. You know, there are some places where we've gone, well, we can't provide that, but we have really looked at the equity guidelines for how to remain safe here. We don't have a dedicated COVID safety officer. We've kind of all taken on that mantle here, but we are looking at all of those guidelines and procedures to inform the way that we practice here in this building. So I would say that we're doing our best to follow those same rules.
Next month, you're opening the family series, which I also love. It's something that Raleigh Little Theater just does and does so well and consistently and accessibly, which I really appreciate. This will be back outside in the amphitheater. Will you be offering sensory friendly performances, and will the precautions or guidelines for audiences change for the family series? For people coming to those family shows, what should they expect?
I'll let Heather talk about the precautions and guidelines. For Elephant and Piggy and all of the children's shows that have been outside, we have considered all of those sensory friendly. So every performance will be sensory friendly, and there will be folks there to help us. For anybody who has needs during the show that arise, we'll have people that are volunteering specifically to help out in terms of the sensory friendly audience that shows up. And we do that because a lot of the times in the indoor theaters, we have special sensory friendly productions because lighting changes very quickly and it's much more contrasting in indoor than outdoor. Outdoor, we do these shows during the day, so there really isn't a lighting design. And we can also control sound, and sound dissipates more outdoors, of course. And there's just more space and more space to move around. So we really feel confident. And the creative team all knows that every performance will be considered sensory friendly. So they're already thinking about it as they're building the show, which is really great. And I'll let Heather take over on guidelines.
Yeah, and we'll provide, just as we have done for the family series shows that have been out in the amphitheater, a guide to attending these shows. So that is a resource that will be available that sort of walks through, here are the ways that it is a sensory-friendly performance. We will be sticking with the same health and safety procedures that we have been doing out in the amphitheater. So we are continuing to limit sales to 300 per show, and that amphitheater seats close to 2,000. So there's plenty of room to spread out, and we will also continue seating every other row in those rows. So we're distancing, we are still limiting tickets, and there's still one entry, paperless entry, so we are sticking with the safety that we have found out in the amphitheater.
For decades, I would say, RLT has been so committed to this community, and I would say arguably one of the preeminent community theaters in Raleigh for sure. How has COVID changed RLT's role or even RLT's relationship within the community? Not just the artistic community, but the community at large, your audiences.
you know, it's challenging for me to say because my relationship with the organization has changed during the pandemic. You know, certainly I was a volunteer here for many years, you know, but then decided to step into this role of executive director during the pandemic. So for me, you know, sort of from a very personal space, I don't know that it was that it changed, but perhaps sort of strengthened the resolve to focus on our community. You know, early on in the pandemic, Patrick and I, along with the staff, created sort of these guiding principles of how we were going to, we knew that we were going to have to make a lot of decisions coming into the pandemic. We had no idea what that would be. We had no idea that we'd still be doing it for a year and a half. But what we knew is that we were in a crisis situation where we were going to have to figure out how to make some probably pretty hard, pretty big decision. And so, you know, we created some guiding principles that were going to help us sort of always put guardrails around what we were going to keep as our touchstones through this. And, you know, certainly there was a one about the long-term financial stability of the organization, but the rest of them were really rooted in the health and safety of our staff, our volunteers, and making sure that we were still providing meaningful experiences for our community. I don't think we fully understood what that was going to mean at the time that we said that, but how that sort of grew over the year was, you know, okay, yes, we're doing virtual things. We can only include a few artists or a few volunteers, but how do we add a layer that involves our community in this? You know, Patrick brilliantly planning a pandemic season, you know, a beautiful example of that was the Midnight Drury Festival that we did. So, you know, one, we were doing radio dramas, which is not something that we normally did, but there was only a handful of artists and volunteers that could be involved in creating that. And so in addition to creating the radio dramas that we produced, we also put out to our community, hey, you know, take Edgar Allan Poe's work and create your own piece of art. And then we will share it as a part of this festival through our social media channels. So that sort of commitment to thinking about, we still have to provide these opportunities for our community. We still have to connect with our community. We were hosting, we called them Chats with Heather and Patrick, just to have a space to for our, our folks to come talk to us and understand how we were thinking about this and how we were thinking. So I think that it wasn't so much of a change because the community has always been central. The volunteers have always been central. They have always been the heart of what we do. I think it strengthened that and brought it into a focus of, even when we come out of the pandemic, we still have to always be thinking that way because, you know, while that was hard and challenging to do through the pandemic, it provided a clarity of focus for us that probably, I mean, really helped us get through the pandemic because, you know, once you sort of center that, I don't want to say that the decisions are easy at that moment, but they do become clear on what is the right thing to do.
I think Heather talked about that beautifully. And I think that, you know, the other thing that the pandemic has, the other opportunity that it's offered all of us, including RLT, but all of us as individuals, is to really address the other pandemic, right, of racism and injustice that exists in the country. And I think that we have spent a lot of time as a staff working on our equity, diversity, inclusion, and anti-racism efforts. That is ongoing work. It is never finished, but we are changing and we are a different company coming out of whatever this moment is. We're a different company now than we were 2 years ago because we've took some space to be really intentional about how do we develop policies and procedures and a culture that is focused on justice. Now, and I think the thing that I want people to understand is that theater has always been about connecting human beings to other human beings. For me as a person who has, who is spiritual, like I really feel like theater allows me to meet characters and people that I have not had the experience. I have not had their life experience. And I can be, I can learn to be empathetic. I can learn to pray for folks who have gone through the experience of a character that I just witnessed that I never knew anything about. So theater is about humanity. Theater doesn't exist without people in a space together. And so for us, the work in anti-racism and equity, diversity, inclusion is fulfilling the mission of what theater is meant to be, which is to invite everybody to the table, to look at a group of characters and situations together, to learn from it, to grow from it, to become better neighbors. That includes conservative people. You know what I mean? Like, I just think, like, so many people think that us saying that is us saying we're taking a political stance in terms of like red and blue stance, right? It is a political stance in that it involves humanity and people, but it's not a red and blue stance. It's an opportunity to learn from each other and to grow and to see each other in a way that is healthy, that is just, and that moves us forward. And so, you know, I do think that it is changing the relationship we have with our community in a way that I hope is positive and more inviting and more inclusive. The first phrase of our mission statement is to be a welcoming space. And we cannot do that if we don't look at these policies and procedures. And if we don't adapt and change, there is no way to really live into that mission. So I want people to come with us. Some people might not. And we will bless them for the time that they spent here. But I do think that people are going to see a different RLT when they come back and volunteer and when they are around us, because we, the board and the staff, have been very intentional about really thinking through how can we be better. RLT has a history of activism. You know, the third show that the theater ever did in its history required that a theater desegregate. You know what I mean? Like, it's who we are. And so we want everybody to be involved with that. And hopefully we can be a place of learning and healing. That's our goal.
I don't want people to get complacent just because doors are open, just because tickets are selling. I mean, Heather and Patrick just told you they're only selling a third of the tickets that are possible in the Canty Theater for this show. Can you both speak about the financial impact COVID has had on RLT and what you need audiences to do and to continue to do? Because it was easy to support theaters when theaters were closed because there was nothing happening. But now that there's things happening, theaters still need our support more so than ever. So could you speak to the state of the union, the state of the theater?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in all the ways, it has been a pretty devastating year for us, for any theater, for, you know, anyone that is dependent on people gathering. It has been a very, very challenging year. And, you know, it was probably just over a year ago that, you know, we were laying off staff. You know, our staff capacity was greatly reduced. You know, things have, of course, started to get better, and there was a lot of public programs that are helping theaters survive and start to rebuild back, and we're very fortunate in many ways. But, you know, what has become very apparent is that we are in this for the long haul. You know, this isn't something that we're going to be done with at the end of this season, potentially even next season. We've got to really rethink how we do a lot of things. And that's not just related to COVID and the health. I think it's also related to the other pandemic that Patrick mentioned about, you know, the race and anti-racism. We've got a lot of things that we've got to pull apart and figure out how to put back together because it hasn't been right for everyone. And so that work, it's going to take time, it's going to take commitment, it's going to take a lot of heart, and it is going to take resources. And so, you know, not only do we need support now and to continue to be a part of our community, we're going to need it to help us figure out the challenges in front of us, the changes that we're going to go through, the transition that needs to happen, that must happen. So it's not only important to financially support these organizations, it's important to keep showing up for these organizations and to keep high-fiving the theater workers, because we're going to be going through it for a while.
Yeah. I mean, even just like a good job and a high five does sound amazing. I mean, there's so much decision fatigue. And I would just say, I would just remind people, the opportunity afforded by theater in general, if you feel safe, is to connect with other people in the same space. That's the opportunity. It's always afforded. That's the reason that is so central to who we are as people. And we don't want to lose that. We don't want to lose that. I think, you know, there's so much great technology in the world that makes us feel connected, but you know, the person to person connection, I hope this time apart has reminded us how important and critical that is. And it's worth supporting and worth investing in. And my goodness, if you live in the Triangle, I have to say, like, you know, I don't know if, you know, if people know, it is bananas how much rich cultural activity you have at your fingertips if you live here. It is probably one of the most abundant in the country, doing really good work on all levels. And if you haven't been to other theaters and our theater, gosh, you got to go. Or in the museums, and like, it is bananas how much we have around here. So if you're not taking advantage of that, you're missing out on the communities you live in, because it's remarkable.
We're going to need our storytellers, right? Storytellers are critical to every single society. They are critical to understanding who we are, who we were. And, you know, what's going to happen, you know, not only do we need theater to help us heal, but we need the storytellers to capture this moment, to capture not only exactly what happened during this moment, but to capture all the emotions of this moment and to be able to reflect it back to individuals, to policymakers, because, you know, the storytellers really are the ones that end up influencing policy change and structural change and public funding, because, you know, for as much as I would love for all of our laws to be made on data-driven decision, they're not. They are based on, you know, much more of the qualitative understanding of what is needed in our communities. And our theaters and our arts scene, they're going to be so important to helping us all process what the hell we've just been through and what is needed to make sure that we continue to heal, and to also help make sure that maybe we put some things in place to make sure that none of this is as hard as it should be next time.
I want to let you know that Raleigh Little Theater's production of The Velocity of Autumn runs through October 3rd. The next production is their family show, Elephant and Piggies, We Are in a Play, and that opens October 23rd. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast. Visit us on social media, on Facebook or Instagram at Beltline to Broadway, or Twitter, Beltline to B-Way, or visit us online at www.beltlinetobroadway.org. Until next time, I'll see you at the theater.